The seismic Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity that could shape America for years to come.
There is a principle that nobody is above the law, and it has always been understood that the president himself has to abide by the law. This opinion, not only does it grant this immunity, but it grants the immunity in some really sweeping ways, I think go far beyond anything anybody could have assumed.
Plus, thousands of Palestinians displaced multiple times already are ordered to relocate once again.
The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
And the European leader with the closest ties to Russia meets with Ukraine's president in a rare visit to Kyiv. Today is July 2nd, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Israeli forces bombarded several areas of southern Gaza Tuesday, and thousands of Palestinians fled their homes in what could be part of a final push of Israel's intensive military operations in 9 months of war. Associated Press correspondent Yosef Fetterman reports.
The Israeli military has ordered a mass evacuation from a large part of the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. This isn't the first time we've seen an evacuation order like this. Israel spent several months inside Khan Yunis battling Hamas before withdrawing earlier this year. The latest order is a sign that Hamas has managed to regroup, and we could soon see Israeli forces moving back into Khan Yunis and a resumption of heavy fighting.
AP correspondent Yosef Fetterman. Gaza's European hospital in Khan Yunis is virtually empty, with staff and patients fleeing after the Israeli army's orders for residents in the surrounding areas to evacuate. UNRWA spokesperson Louise Waterridge.
UNRWA estimates that around 250,000 people have been impacted by these orders. Of course, as usual, we expect these numbers to grow. But, you know, for us, this is it's another devastating blow to the humanitarian response here. It's another devastating blow for the people and the families on the ground. It seems that they are forcibly being displaced again and again. You know, making these decisions is now impossible.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken affirmed Monday that President Joe Biden's proposal to end the Israel-Hamas conflict is achievable and urged Hamas to accept it. Blinken also underlined the importance of post-war plans to rebuild Gaza and prevent a security vacuum in the territory. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Inglesias reports.
As Israeli troops continue deepening their incursions in Gaza in search of militants, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced Monday that Hamas's military capabilities have almost been eliminated.
We are advancing to the end of the phase of eliminating the terrorist army of Hamas, and there will be a continuation to strike its remnants.
The announcement was made as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in an interview at the Brookings Institution in Washington, called on Hamas's leadership to accept a phased peace proposal currently on the table.
I think the proposal that President Biden put forward is achievable. And it would be the best way forward, the quickest way to end the conflict in Gaza, to stop the violence, to massively surge assistance, to get everyone home, including American hostages.
As the secretary spoke, the voices of protesters gathered outside the Brookings Institution could also be heard. Blinken, who didn't acknowledge them, stressed that the Israel-Hamas conflict cannot end with a vacuum in Gaza.
It has to end in a way that makes sure that there are clear, coherent, achievable plans for Gaza's governance, for its security, and of course, to start to help people to rebuild their lives that have been so decimated and destroyed.
One of the Palestinians whose life has radically changed and wants accountability is Dr. Mohamed Abu Selmeya. The director of Al-Shifa Hospital was released early Monday after being in Israeli custody since November. He says prisoners were subjected to severe torture and his little finger was broken. He was repeatedly hit on the head until he bled. He says there was almost daily torture in Israeli prisons.
We were subjected to severe torture.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
That was newly sworn in President Donald Trump laying out his vision for a bolder and larger United States. Details coming up. Also, demographers say the first members of Generation Beta are being born this month. And the death toll from a weekend gasoline tanker explosion in Nigeria has risen to 98. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. President Donald Trump got right to work upon his return to the White House on Monday, announcing numerous executive actions on top-line issues such as immigration and energy development, and in his inaugural address, promising to expand U.S. territory all the way, he said, to Mars. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
On this historic first day of his second term in office, President Donald Trump laid out his vision for a bolder and larger United States.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
Then he got to work, signing a stack of executive orders. He said they include a declaration of a national emergency at the southern border that would allow the deployment of troops, and a national energy emergency that will allow more domestic extraction. He also declared that there are only two genders, and said he would order that the Gulf of Mexico be renamed the Gulf of America. Historians say that Trump made history by using what is historically a unifying speech to portray a future that many Americans may disagree with. University of Texas history professor Jeremy Suri spoke to VOA from Austin via Zoom.
It was less an inaugural speech and more a State of the Union. He just listed a series of bullet points of projects he wanted to undertake, from deporting immigrants to seizing back the Panama Canal.
Thousands of Trump supporters came to Washington from across the country because they say his policies speak to them. Melanie Vole is a resident of Cleveland.
Common sense, the bringing back of common sense out loud. So many people have in my position feel like we are the silent majority. And I think this is going to give us the opportunity to speak out loud and to be, you know, and unafraid to speak the truth and to speak common sense.
Shortly after his inaugural, Trump spoke to a smaller group of supporters in the Capitol and reiterated claims that the 2020 election was totally rigged, a claim without proof. He also alluded to his plans to pardon some of those convicted over the violent events of January 6, 2021, when a mob of Trump supporters attempted to disrupt the certification of the election won by Joe Biden.
And I think this was a better speech than the one I made upstairs, okay? I think this was better, J.D. I think this was much better.
Some of Trump's powerful supporters expressed their joy.
This is what victory feels like. Yeah!
CEO Elon Musk was among the billionaires in the Capitol Rotunda for the ceremony. Consumer advocacy groups are sounding alarms about some of the new president's quieter moves that seek to loosen regulations and, they say, benefit these elite few. Lisa Gilbert is co-president of the nonprofit consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen.
When we think about why the incoming Trump administration wants to freeze regulations and halt public protections wholesale, it is at the behest of the wealthiest among us, corporate special interests. You know, they are who benefits when we don't have guardrails on the books.
Historians and analysts say it's not clear how many of Trump's day one actions, which his officials say number more than 100, will fly when challenged legally. For that answer, they say, look to tomorrow. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
It was a long day in Washington, filled with tradition and some out of the ordinary events as the United States swore in its 47th president. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti brings us the sights and sounds from Inauguration Day 2025.
The golden age of America is coming.
$10.
Inauguration 2025, making history for many reasons.
It's bone-chilling cold, man. I can't.
Minus 11 degrees Celsius, forcing the inauguration inside the Capitol Rotunda, where 600 could see it live. Thousands more stood on the National Mall.
Let us remember.
Watching the oaths on their phones and seeing government change.
I think not being in the minority of opinion as far as politically, it feels good to be able to say, yes, we're bringing back things that make sense.
Tim Wasson is thinking ahead for Vice President J.D. Vance.
Everything I've read and everything I believe in my heart believes 4 years from right now, he'll be our next president.
Andrew Dinoon brought his whole family here, despite voting independent all his life.
I voted both sides of the aisle. Libertarian a lot, you know, but a lot of the policies and things that Trump speaks about kind of endears us, you know, as a family.
It's a good time for us to start having discussions in our house about, I don't want to enforce my beliefs on my children, but I want to explain to them why I feel maybe more conservative on this aspect or why I feel more liberal on that aspect.
Since their marching in the parade was canceled, this choir from Louisiana roved around the capital city. With the flurry of changes in plans on Friday, one thing didn't change. Security. 25,000 police officers are in town, and nearly all of the 48 kilometers of fencing still stands.
Back the other way.
Supporters crowded closed checkpoints at the arena where President Donald Trump was to speak to a crowd of 20,000. Many of them had left behind backpacks and purses to be allowed in.
It doesn't matter, you know, Trump's the president now, so everything's all right.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
The first indoor inauguration in 40 years. More security than any inauguration. Donald Trump, a president serving non-consecutive terms. And at 78, he is the oldest president. All now inauguration history. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
U.S. Senator Marco Rubio from Florida became the first of President Donald Trump's cabinet nominees to be sworn in as Secretary of State today. At his swearing-in ceremony, Rubio emphasized Trump's policy of putting American needs first.
Everything we do must be justified by the answer to one of three questions. Does it make us stronger? Does it make us safer? And does it make us more prosperous? If it doesn't do one of those three things, we will not do it.
The U.S. Senate unanimously confirmed Rubio, a China hawk and staunch backer of Israel, just hours after Trump took office on Monday. Vice President J.D. Vance administered his oath of office this morning. Rubio said the Trump administration's policy goals include peace.
It's a transformational moment. The United States, I think, is now, as President Trump pointed out last night, and I believe deeply, we are headed into a new era that I think will make the world a safer place. We have a president who yesterday, President Trump made clear in his inaugural speech that one of the primary goals of American foreign policies is the promotion of peace.
Rubio was a long-term member of the Senate Foreign Relations and Intelligence Committees. The son of immigrants from Cuba, Rubio is the first Latino to serve as the country's top diplomat. He will hit the ground running, hosting a meeting today in Washington of his counterparts from Australia, India, and Japan, one day after President Donald Trump started his second term in office. John Macomb Mbaku is the Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics and John S. Hinckley Fellow at Weber State University. He is also a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. In a conversation we had, here is his take on the importance of the U.S. inauguration ceremony that took place here in Washington, D.C. yesterday.
The U.S. has a democratic system.
And one of the most important aspects of a democracy is regular elections, elections that are regularly carried out. They are fair and credible. And I believe the last election was fair. It was credible, and it was quite competitive. And so what happens in a democracy is that after an election, the inauguration, a process in which the incumbent administration hands over power to the incoming administration. So inauguration is a very important aspect of a democratic system. The critical aspect of the process is that one president leaves and another one comes in, and the one who is coming in is sworn in by members of the judiciary. Somebody from the judiciary swears in the person who is coming in as president and as vice president. That's basically what the process is. All the other things associated with it are just to give the country an opportunity to celebrate in the peaceful transition of power.
President Trump has made a lot of promises. Professor Mbaku says so far, Africa is not a top priority in his upcoming administration.
He has made a lot of promises, but you know how it is in politics. Sometimes politicians make a lot of fantastic promises before they get into power. And then they get into power and discover that they are not able to fulfill all those promises. Part of it has to do with the fact that as a democratic country, as a country based on the rule of law, the government must operate within the law. What exactly Trump is going to do will be determined by a lot of regulations, a lot of laws, the Constitution being the most important of them. So with respect to Africa, the administration has not, the incoming administration has not actually told us exactly what they intend to do when it comes to Africa. There isn't any, as far as I know, there isn't any white paper from the Trump transition team that is expected to, or that outlines exactly what this administration plans to do. One thing that those of us who have an interest in Africa have said before is that Africans should not wait until the new administration comes in and then try to see what its policy is going to be towards Africa. African countries must understand that Africa is very important to the U.S., regardless of what politicians in the U.S. are saying, or regardless of what public opinion in the U.S. might be saying. Africa is a very important strategic continent for American foreign policy. What I'm saying here is that Africans should get together as a group, not as individual countries, but as a group, maybe through the African Union or through regional communities. Africans can contribute to defining that relationship, and they can do so more effectively if they approach that issue from the point of view of a regional or continental process.
The professor points out that Africa has a lot to offer the United States.
Africans have a lot to offer. Remember, some people have been saying that Trump's interest in Greenland has something to do with minerals, in other words, natural resources, and number two, security between the Western world and Russia. Africa has exactly that to offer. Africa has a lot of minerals. And number two, Africa also has the opportunity to provide the type of security that the U.S. Requires in order to promote its international policies. So Africans can leverage those resources in order to have a mutually acceptable and mutually beneficial relationship with the Trump administration and the U.S., the Trump administration in particular, and the U.S. in general. So it isn't that Africa will be coming to this negotiation with its hands open, with nothing to give. Africans have a lot to give. I mean, tremendous amount to give. I mean, you can understand why the Chinese are interested in Africa, why the Russians are interested in Africa, why the Turks are interested in Africa, the Koreans, South Korea primarily, are interested in Africa. And the reason is because Africa has a lot to offer. And why not use that leverage to redefine the relationship between the continent and the new administration and the U.S. in general? But Africans can come to the table not as beggars, but as individuals who are equally well endowed, and they will be saying, look, you cannot take us for granted. We have a lot to offer. We have a lot of investment opportunities to offer multinational corporations in the U.S. that are looking for opportunities to make a profit. We want this relationship, but we don't want a colonial relationship. We want a relationship that is mutually beneficial.
That was John Makum Mbaku, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Utah. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Rescuers in Sudan say that 16 civilians were killed and 18 others injured when paramilitary forces shelled a famine-stricken displacement camp in Al-Fashir, the besieged capital of North Darfur. The area's emergency response room, part of a network of volunteer rescuers across the war-torn country, says the paramilitary rapid support forces, at war with the regular army since April 2023, shelled the market in Abu Shuk displacement camp. Al-Fashir is home to some 2 million people who have been under RSF siege since May. The French news agency AFP reports that in December, a UN-backed integrated food security phase classification review found that famine had gripped 3 displacement camps in North Darfur, including Abu Shuk. Nearly all of Darfur is now controlled by the RSF, which has also taken over swaths of the southern Kordofan region. Demographers say the first members of the Generation Beta are being born this month, following on the heels of millennials, Gen Z and Gen Alpha. VOA spoke with African futurists on what they think will define the lives of the continent's Gen Beris, AI to better life expectancy and economic growth. Henry Wilkins reports.
Labels like baby boomers, millennials, or Generation Alpha are increasingly used globally to describe people born around the same time, often sharing similar experiences and challenges. VOA spoke with African futurists and scientists to understand how Gen B, who will be born between now and 2039, can expect Africa to have changed by the time they are adults. Halidou Tintou, a scientist from Burkina Faso, who is conducting cutting-edge research with the recently developed malaria vaccine, told VOA, people born in Africa in 2024 to 2025 can reasonably expect that malaria will no longer be a major public health problem in the years to come, and especially when those babies become adults. More than 200 million people in Africa catch malaria each year, and 500,000 people die of it, according to the World Health Organization. Malaria is particularly deadly for children, according to UNICEF, the UN's children's agency. Improvements in public health like this will lead to a brighter future for children born in the coming years. Paul Kwales Van Ufford, a social policy advisor for UNICEF.
Children born today also are less likely to die before their fifth birthday. And one of the big progress stories in Africa, because of vaccination, management of diseases, somewhat less poverty, is that child mortality has reduced.
He says that life expectancy in Africa has increased exponentially in the last 20 years. Data from the UN shows that if current trends continue, Africa's life expectancy could reach 70 by 2050, compared to 61 years old now. Researchers in Kenya who've recently developed an artificial intelligence or AI chatbot to educate young people about HIV and AIDS say the role of AI is going to grow in Africa. Dr. Consolata Gaki is with the University of Embu.
The young people are coming up with that are utilizing AI to solve societal or local problems, from image processing to prediction of weather. There is so much that is happening within our country.
Jackie Siliez, head of African Futures at the South Africa-based Institute for Security Studies, says Gen B's relationship with technologies like AI will only expand in the coming years.
It's a future of more freedom and more self-dependence, a future of innovation, a future in which technology really needs to benefit the ordinary person. And the relationship between technology and the individual, I think, is just every year is going to expand.
Siliez says that tech will allow greater access to the globally developing gig economy, which means workers will become less reliant on the government. He also says that about the time Gen B members become adults, the continent will pass an important milestone. For the first time, there'll be more people of working age on the continent than dependents, like children and older people. That could lead to an explosion in economic growth. Although there are many challenges facing Africa, Generation Beta has a lot to get excited about. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Nigeria's emergency agency says the death toll from a weekend gasoline tanker explosion in north central Niger state has risen to 98. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The National Emergency Management Agency, or NEMA, says about 50 people sustained burns in Saturday's tanker explosion in central Nigeria, in addition to those killed. The victims are currently receiving treatment at local hospitals. The 60,000-liter fuel tanker crashed in central Niger state near Abuja, spilling its contents. Officials say locals rushed to the scene with generators to siphon fuel from the tanker, triggering the explosion. Manzo Iziko is a spokesperson at NEMA.
A mass burial has been conducted where the people that died at the scene of the incident have been put to rest. And the injured people have also been taken to various primary and secondary medical facilities.
At least three times in recent months, tanker explosions in Nigeria have caused dozens of deaths. A similar incident to Saturday's killed 170 people in northern Jigawa state back in October. In September, another 48 died trying to scoop up fuel after a tanker collided with a truck full of cattle in Niger state. The problems start with frequent road accidents involving the tankers. According to Nigeria's Road Safety Corps, there were about 1,500 tanker accidents in 2020 alone. The Petrol Tanker Drivers Association blames the frequency of these crashes on poor road conditions and a lack of enforcement of road safety measures, including speed and load limits. When the tankers crash, locals quickly move in, hoping to take away some fuel before police arrive. Augustine Egbon is the chairman of the Petrol Tanker Drivers Association.
Myself, I'm a tanker driver. I know how it is. The roads are bad. Secondly, my advice now to everybody is that as soon as a tanker has an accident or tanker failed now, nobody should go there. Because sometimes when tanker fall, the tanker will be there. It will spend almost 2 or 3 hours. It's when people started going there, that is where we see the fire will now, so there the fire will start.
Nigeria has an aging 5,000-kilometer-long oil pipeline, but most of the 50 million liters of gasoline consumed here daily are transported by roads to pumps. Authorities have pledged to address the issue and enforce stricter regulations. The recent surge in gasoline prices, rising fivefold since President Bola Tinubu scrapped fuel subsidies in May 2023, has driven many to risk their lives to retrieve fuel during accidents. The locals often use or sell the fuel they collect from crash sites. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.